You're listening to the Kumek Podcast, hosted by our teacher development team. Enjoy!
Hello, James. Very warm welcome to our Kumek podcast. I wondered if you wanted to introduce yourself for the listeners today.
Really, thank you very much for having me here. So I'm James Galloway. I'm a academic rheumatologist at King's. For the purpose of today, I'm also the head of assessment for the MBBS curriculum. Originally, I was just responsible for stage three, for years four and five, the clinical years, but more recently, I've taken on a role of across the programme.
Brilliant, and congratulations. And I'm really delighted we've actually been able to record this, because I know we had this conversation pre-COVID and we were going to meet in person, and then obviously events overtook us and the rest of the world. So I'm really pleased we've been able to pick this up again. I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about how assessments work at GKT, so Guy's, King's and Thomas's.
Yeah, so we've got an assessment programme that is based around four domains of assessment. Some written components, some in-person components, and some components that are portfolio-based. So just to give specifics, for knowledge, we assess knowledge based through what's called progress test model. Essentially, a series of exams that provide students with 100 to 150 best of five, single best answer style questions, which map to a blueprint which captures information from across their stage. And we may talk more about progress tests. We also get project work, and the project work, as it goes through the stages, evolves. For example, in the final year, it's their elective project. In earlier years, they do quality improvement project. They do scholarly projects. Projects that are submitted for representing a piece of work over several months, done in their own time, and as final documents submitted for marking. We have OSCEs, which assess clinical skills, communication skills, and those are the in-person exams, often with patients or with simulated patients. And then we have portfolio, which is not graded as a mark, but is a requirement that they must pass the portfolio as they progress through, which captures some of those other skills. Some of the GMC core skills are captured in there, but also some of the workplace-based assessments are captured in there.
Brilliant, thank you. I think that explains the overview and the different ways of doing it really well. And you're right, I did want to ask more about progress tests, because I hear from lots of tutors that they don't quite understand why we've shifted to using progress tests, and equally, some students really understand why they do this test repeatedly when they haven't been taught, especially in the earlier years, some of the knowledge, and others sort of struggle to understand it and it feels a bit more stressful for them. I wondered if you wouldn't mind expanding on that for us.
Yeah, sure. So it is one of those things. We say we're going to do an exam and we're going to test you on things we've not even taught you yet. And people think, my word, this is crazy. Why would you do this? And it feels so unfair. But I would also, if you look at the evidence out there, and you said you've got a big pot of cash and you can set up any type of program you'd like for an assessment of a medical school, and your goal is to get the best possible knowledge base when they qualify, it would be hard to do something other than progress tests. And I think there's a few bits that really are interesting from an educational sort of learning theory point of view. One thing we know is that if you have boom or bust style tests, you do a block, maybe you do your peds block, you do your orthopedics block, and you put an exam at the end of it. Medical students are generally very good at cramming for those exams. Those 2 weeks for the exam, they will work really hard, study everything they need to know, ace the exam and move on. But they forget it very rapidly. There's a really quite convincing evidence that these sort of short-lived learning experiences don't lead to lasting memory. Whereas if you move away from those boom or bust individual exams to an exam where rather you say, actually, from the beginning of year two, we're going to start giving you a repeated assessment at time points throughout the year with questions that can come from anything in the whole curriculum. In year two, you might only score 30%, and that percentage will slowly increase as you go through the years. But the point is, there's no gaming this by studying and cramming for one subject specialty. What you have to do, if you want to get good at the exams, you need to just have a slow burn approach to build up your breadth of knowledge across the entire spectrum that you might be tested on. Take this hypothetical scenario where you might have some national licensing exam where everyone was going to be measured on a common playing field. Not that they'd ever do that. That style where you had that and you say, we want our students to do as good as they possibly can in a national licensing exam, the progress test would be the way to do it, because it fosters that learning at a slow, steady learn across the entire program. There's one other thing I'd say about progress tests. When people say, well, okay, I get that, but still testing people on untaught material seems inherently unfair. Although one thing about medicine that is very different to some other areas that we do in sort of undergraduate education, is that in medicine, we are training people to be in a situation where they'll be tested on untaught material. When someone comes through the door into your GP practice or into ED, there's a good chance you won't have seen that disease before, but you need to be able to reason. And so one of the key things we want to test in the progress test style in those single best answers is not just simple factual recall, but is also reasoning, clinical reasoning skill. And that, I think, is one of the really important bits that people learn right from the beginning of their time in medical school, is the reasoning behind clinical decision making as a clinician.
Yeah, that is a really helpful explanation of how these exams work. I think there's two things that sort of come up for me. One is that we have really bright students who are used to acing exams. So I can see how they come into medical school having got amazing grades at A levels and then being told that we expect you to get 30% in this exam. It doesn't align with how they've been taught educationally in the past. But there's something that really rings true for me. You know, I graduated, obviously, quite a few years ago. I've been doing this for a while. And I remember just being really good at cramming and learning for that test, passing exams, and then just forgetting that information. So I can actually see the logic behind this to kind of help him with long-term learning, and the idea that we're helping people understand those clinical reasoning processes a little bit earlier on, that certainly makes sense to me.
There is one other bit as well, and if I was talking to tutors who are potentially going to be interacting with our students, one thing that sometimes can be a little bit of a sort of a reassurance is that when students say, well, I'm really worried, what's going to go on my transcript? If I do an exam and I've not been taught any of the material, what goes on my transcript? So this is quite important. The transcript for the record is not your raw score. It's a standardized score, which standardizes everyone's score where 50% is the pass mark. Say you do your very first exam, you score 39%. We grade the pass mark not based upon final standard. The pass mark for that exam is based upon your cohort. So we might set the pass mark at 27% or 30%. And so that 30% becomes, in the student record, 50%. So you will have scored, in the student record, 67%. This is really important because it means what goes into student record is a true reflection of where you are compared to your peers. So if you are someone who is at the very top end of knowledge base compared to your peers, you will score a really high mark in that exam. So actually, this doesn't penalise you on your student transcript. And that's quite an important bit as just a buffer reassurance for students. So they will see their raw score and they will think, crumbs, I've really not scored many questions correctly, but I can see I've done better than my year group. So I'm happy that I'm working hard, I'm on track for being top class student or otherwise.
And do they get centiles as well? I can't remember.
Yeah, so we send lots of information because, and this was, you know, there's some of that. The way we can help people understand their performance is by not just telling them their score, because often you can tell someone their score and you say, how'd you do? And you think, oh, I did okay. But until you show how they did compared to their peers, you don't really get the full learning. So we give them not only their score, but we give them their Z position and their centile position. So they can look at their Z score, their centile score, and say, so this is my score, but I can see that I am actually below average or above average in my year group. So people can then start to focus and say, well, my knowledge base is where I need to improve. And so it's really important people don't just look at their raw score. We do give them lots of information. Plus that we give them breakdown by subject so they can say, where are the areas I did worst on? And, you know, if they say, well, actually, I scored badly on the topics I haven't yet learned, well, that makes sense.
And just remind me, the Z score is how they do in comparison.
So the Z score, it's your sort of a measure of your performance compared to the average. So a Z score of 0 would mean you're average, and Z scores above 0, so positive Z scores, means you're to the right. And a Z score of 1 would mean you're one standard deviation above the average, and a Z score 1 below. So it gives you the idea of where you are compared to your peers. Positive values, good. Negative values, could do more.
Brilliant. That's really helpful. I think also helpful for me as a personal tutor when I'm talking to my students about their results. I'm also really interested in the fact that we are still in the middle of this ongoing COVID pandemic, and just how, you know, challenging it has been in lots of different ways. And I know we have, you know, moved over and back again to sort of from online exams, and closed and open book exams, and sort of there have been a, sort of additional stresses for students. And I wondered if you wanted to kind of share with us what that process has been like.
Crumbs, yes, it's been a it's been a roller coaster, and you know, I have to say the support, the program support team at the KCL MBBS have been absolute legends through all this. I know our students sometimes complain about the sort of administration within medical schools. That's not just King's, that's everywhere. But I genuinely have been astonished at the sort of mountains that have been moved to switch exams from online to offline and vice versa. And the coordination of it has been astonishing. So yeah, absolutely. We had this scenario where when the pandemic was at its peak, we just could not justify having everyone in an exam hall together. And we switched exams to being an online format. We looked at whether you could proctor that, so have some mechanism it could still be closed book, but it almost impossible to do. For a start, we would have to have every student having access to webcams, and short of providing people with webcams, it's not something, it's not a requirement of being on the course. And we know we have quite a lot of students who don't have access to good quality webcam technology. It slows down your internet connection, and so that's a barrier. The other thing is we would need a sort of a virtual environment that was closed to any other, not allows your computer to open over and any other materials. And that's actually quite complicated in terms of installing the software. And then you also need the invigilators who watch the webcam. And so the infrastructure you need to do that, particularly during the pandemic where the typical number of invigilators wasn't available, meant that we had to go with just a pure open book model. Now, some previous studies have looked at this. So there's a study from New Zealand published quite recently suggesting that open book, closed book made no difference. But I think that the studies looking at open book versus closed book have been quite skewed. And the people who've done them open book, they've kept the exams short so that there is a time pressure. And the style of questions is really important, whether they're questions that are easy to look up or not. With our exams, I think there's a lot of question banks out there that people can look from. And I think the looking up, having internet resources, does make a difference. And we've studied this. We've seen that when you look at our open book and our closed book exams, and we've had this bizarre thing over the last years where we've had open book exams and then closed book exams and then open book again. So we've had opportunities to compare for individual students how their performance varies. And it looks like people do in the ballpark of 10% better when we give them an open book compared to a closed book. But there's some other quirks. If you look at like how many people get an improvement that looks almost implausible. So in a typical progress test sequence, seeing someone improve by more than 20% is really unusual. As you know, it's a handful of people in the exam will improve by that much. But when we went from closed book to open book, we saw well over 20% of people scoring much higher, suggesting the rank order changes. And I think open book probably tests slightly different skill sets. And some students will do much better in the open book environment. Maybe they're less stressed. Maybe it's the resources they have access to. But it's definitely assessing a slightly different set of skills. And I think we all felt it was a less robust assessment in terms of if our goal is to identify minimally competent clinicians who are going to be going forward and progressing to the next stage of the medical degree or even qualifying as a doctor, it's much harder to be confident that an open book exam allows you to assess that minimum competency. I suspect the real top star students probably still will, you know, and the people who've done really well tend to do really well across board. But given that competency is one of that minimum competency is something we're really keen to be able to capture, the open book is harder to be confident about.
It was interesting. I was speaking to one of my personal tutees today, and she's just done the sixth progress test in person. She was delighted. She said she found it far less stressful because if she thought she knew an answer, the only option was to just put that down, and she didn't have the option to sort of second guess herself and look it up. And I think you're right. I think actually where you go to look things up is testing something slightly different. She also said, you know, she didn't have to worry about her Wi-Fi because I was thinking about what you were saying about the webcams and just how difficult it is because we're never quite sure exactly what environment our students are in. So yes, fingers crossed, we are moving back to something that, whilst it will still stress students out, I'm sure, actually, I hope there'll be some benefits that it will feel a bit less stressful. And the other thing I was going to ask you about, James, is we have weekly student newsletters that come out, and I noticed there was a message from you about a particular question that I think some students had complained about just the way it was written. And there was a really kind of honest response from you and an apology about the way that was written. It was about a transgender patient. And so it just made me think about the importance of how we write these questions. And I know Leila Abdullah, who is our teacher development co-lead with me, is going to be doing a workshop soon. So we'll be asking our GP tutors to sign up for that, but and how representative they have to be and how we've got to keep up to date with those changes. But it's quite a skill, isn't it? But I just wanted to acknowledge a slight mistake, and we are gonna kind of, we're working on fixing it.
I mean, one thing I'd say, and thank you for mentioning it, because I think when you write things in the exam, I know the purpose is we're setting standards, but we also are putting information out there, people read, everyone in the medical school will read all those questions. And the language we use is really important. You know, this last 18 months, we've seen that there are things enshrined in medical practice that still need correcting. We've seen this fantastic work that's been going on around equality, diversity, particularly around things like, should we adjust the EGFR for ethnicity? And we shouldn't. We absolutely shouldn't. And that needs to be reflected in our exams. Issues around trans health and getting the communication right. The exams need to be reflective of what we teach. And so it's something I'm really passionate that we do well. And we did get it wrong in this exam. And we absolutely had to make that clear to students. But we live and learn. And that is certainly, you know, this is, as you said, and your plug about getting people to go and do these questions, because actually what we need is a really diverse faculty writing these questions. It's a really rewarding thing writing the questions and thinking about them. And so we're enormously grateful for contributions.
Brilliant. Well, we'll make sure we get some your way. So I just wanted to say thank you for taking your time today to speak to me. I think this will be really useful for lots of educators and students, and certainly our teachers. And I wondered whether, James, you could leave us with any top tips that you've got for our teachers to support our students with all the assessments that they do.
The golden message I'd give for people who are preparing for exams is some people focus their exams on just doing past questions. But if you want to be really good as a clinician, the exams are a metric that are important, but it's not the be all and end all. And you need to create a learning base and a learning experience that is as diverse as possible. Read books, watch videos, watch all the Keats material that we put online, get to your placement, never miss your placements, and do your past questions. But to be good at the exam, you need to have the breadth of experience, because learning is about seeing information again and again in different formats. Read the text, you do the question, and then you see it in the clinic. That's how you'll remember it.
I think that's excellent advice. I have to say, I think if you can hang your learning on a patient that you can remember and picture, it's just going to stay with you. Thank you so much again, James. And I hope we'll get to meet a bit sooner next time.
Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Tweet at us at CUMEC4KCL on Twitter. Thank you for listening. See you next time.